Welcome in, everyone. Ready to go a little deeper, explore something maybe unsettling, but important.
Let's do it.
Today, we're diving into 1984. And look, we know you've read it. You've shared some seriously insightful thoughts with us.
Always love hearing them.
But the thing is, 1984, it just hits different, right? Still relevant, still unsettling, still feels a little too real sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
So we're not here to just rehash the plot. We want to dig into why this book is like a warning system across decades, echoing right into our world.
Definitely.
And one of the things Orwell throws right in your face is the surveillance. It's everywhere in 1984, right? Telescreens, always watching, can't turn them off. It's futuristic and way too familiar at the same time, don't you think? I mean, what do you make of that choice, these watchful eyes in every home?
It's kind of brilliant, right? Orwell tapped into this primal fear of being watched, even in your own space. And this was way before the internet, before smartphones, all that. Telescreens are that constant reminder. Big brother is always there. No privacy, no escape. But what gets me how people in the book just accept it.
Yeah, they're so used to it. It's just life.
Exactly. The surveillance states become normal.
Yeah.
That's what's insidious about totalitarian regimes, you know?
Yeah.
They make oppression invisible, just part of the background noise of life.
It's not even Jay's tea, the telescreens, though. It's the victory gin, the awful food, always rationed, shortages everywhere, keeps people just barely getting by, never comfortable enough to rock the boat. Was that a real tactic or just Orwell being bleak?
Oh, it's real. Historically, regimes have used scarcity and propaganda to keep control, keep the people hungry, literally and figuratively. They won't bite the hand that barely feeds them, right?
Yeah. Grim, but effective. And speaking of effective but terrifying, there's the whole 2 minutes hate thing. That orchestrated rage, the way it's designed to manipulate people, it's almost timeless, isn't it?
Right. The 2 minutes hate is like Orwell's masterclass in mass manipulation. Crowds, powerful images, the right words. He understood how that worked, how to create mass hysteria, groupthink, all before those terms even existed. You channel all those anxieties people have into collective anger, point it at a fake enemy, boom, no more dissent.
And then he takes it up a notch, right? The junior spies, kids turned into tools of the system, taught to spy on their own families. What does that kind of indoctrination, that young, do to a society long term?
You basically engineer a society on fear and suspicion. Mm-hmm. Report on your parents, your neighbors. There's no trust anywhere. It's chilling but effective if you want to stop rebellion before it even starts. People censor themselves, doubt each other. Paranoia becomes the norm.
And that's where Winston comes in, right?
And
in this world where everything's controlled, he dares to do something so small, so simple, but so dangerous in Oceania. He starts keeping a diary.
It's an act of defiance, almost. When your thoughts are policed, just the act of writing them down, trying to hold on to them, that becomes huge.
And it leads him to Julia and that secret room above Mr. Charrington's shop. God, the way Orwell describes that place. No telescreens, real coffee, actual chocolate. It's like this little bubble of sanity, I guess. How important is that, that physical space for Winston and Julia?
It's everything. That room, it's a sanctuary. A reminder that humanity still exists somewhere under all the oppression. The fact that they can be alone together, that's already huge. And their affair, it's not just about sex. It's about rebelling against the party, trying to control every single part of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Taking back some of that control, you know.
And yet it feels so fragile, this tiny bit of freedom in this massive machine.
It's heartbreaking, right? Orwell reminds you, even in the worst times, people still crave connection, freedom. But those things are easily crushed.
You see that in how Winston clings to these little things, like the glass paperweight, that old rhyme he learns. What is it about those objects that means so much to him?
Their ties to a past the party's trying to erase. The paperweight with the coral inside, it's this tiny piece of beauty of complexity that exists outside their ideology. And the rhyme, passed down over generations. That's history, continuity, something the party can't totally control.
And that brings us to one of the most messed up parts of 1984, the manipulation of truth. Winston, at the Ministry of Truth, rewriting history. God, it's like Orwell saying, control the past, you control everything.
Exactly. The memory hole, where Winston's tossing inconvenient truths. It's like, that's a powerful image, right? Totalitarian regimes, they erase dissent, they control the narrative, get rid of any evidence that contradicts you, and boom, you're always right.
And then there's doublethink. This whole idea that you can believe two opposite things at once, that feels scarily relevant today with all the misinformation flying around. How does that even work?
Doublethink. It's like mental gymnastics, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to force yourself to accept whatever the party says, even if it makes no sense, even if it contradicts your own experience.
So instead of fighting it, you just accept the contradiction.
Yeah, it's like self-brainwashing. You're letting the party control your reality. And it's terrifying how relevant that is now, right? Fake news, propaganda.
It's like he's saying, doubt your own mind and you're theirs for the taking.
That's the real danger, right? Critical thinking goes out the window. Blind obedience is all that's left.
Makes Winston's rebellion even more incredible, even though, yeah, it fails.
That desire for truth, though, for freedom, to think for yourself, it's a powerful thing, even in a story as bleak as this.
Speaking of, towards the end, Winston's convinced if there is hope, it lies in the proles, thinks these everyday people, they're somehow immune to the party's BS. What do you make of that?
That's thought, isn't it? The proles, they're just living their lives, no time for politics. Winston sees that as a kind of purity, you know, potential for something real, something not controlled.
Julie's not buying it, though. She's all about survival, keeping your head down, not rocking the boat.
And maybe she has a point. The proles, they're not exactly revolutionaries, are they? More worried about the lottery than overthrowing Big Brother. It's left open, really, whether they could ever be the force Winston hopes for.
And that last scene in the Chestnut Tree Cafe, Winston, totally broken, saying he loved Big Brother. Is that real? Or a final act of rebellion hidden where no one would ever think to look?
See, that's Orwell, right? Leaving you with that question. Is Winston brainwashed? Or is there a piece of him, even now, that the party could never touch?
It's an ending that stays with you, that's for sure.
As it should. Great books, they do that. They make you think about the hard stuff ourselves, the world we create, how easily it all could go wrong.
So coming out of 1984, what stays with you? What echoes loudest in our world today?
For me, it's vigilance.
Mm-hmm.
Orwell, he's reminding us, the tools of oppression, they change. Telescreens become algorithms, the Ministry of Truth is social media. But the desire for power, that never goes away. We can't let ourselves forget that.
Chilling, but important. 1984, it's more than just a dystopia, right? It's a warning. And we've seen today, maybe it's more relevant now than ever. Thanks for diving in with us. Hope it's given you something to think about, something to hold on to. And hey, maybe even a new appreciation for how powerful and fragile truth really is.